This is the Dan Le Batard Show with the Stugatz Podcast.
Aggressive. Again, it's very early in the morning and the music is starting off more like 10 p.m. than 10 a.m. Ryan Fitzpatrick, selfish.
Enough with him. Seriously.
He comes out and says how heartbroken he is. He's never been so hurt, even though he's been benched many, many times. Selfish. Get out of the way, Fitzpatrick. It is Tua time. We don't have time. We fell in love briefly with your beard, but you were a rented mistress. We were with you. What are you shaking your head no about, Billy? You want to put him in the Hall of Fame and have him start on Sunday?
Well, yeah, in 2 weeks. But yeah, I think everybody feels the same way. I think once they heard Ryan Fitzpatrick, everyone was kind of like, do we have to do this right now? Can't this wait a little bit longer? I mean, everyone's heart broke when his heart broke, right?
No, he is selfish. He should be mentoring Tua, and selfishly, he is standing in his way by telling us all about his heartbreak, taking away the Tua shine.
I mean, he's 37 years old. He is not a starting quarterback. He has 5,000 yards for three different teams in that division because he's not very good. He's replaced dozens of quarterbacks, and now his heart is broken because he's the one being replaced? Please.
He's not even saying it's a bad move. He's just saying it's a move that makes him sad because he'd like to play. I don't understand what the issue is.
Well,
here.
I'll tell
Real
you.
Real men don't have feelings, Chris Cody. This is sports.
That's right. No time for feelings. Bring in the young body to replace the old body. They're all disposable, including the beard. However, I don't like my ally on this. I am not, I want to now change my opinion and be heartbroken totally because Ryan Fitzpatrick is blubbering.
My heart just hurt all day. Like it was heartbreaking for me, you know, and Flo kind of said what he said and said what he said to you guys as well. And that's the decision and the direction that the organization is going in. And obviously, you know, we've talked in the past, me and you guys about, you know, how I'm the placeholder and this eventually was going to happen no matter it was just a matter of kind of when, not if. And it's still just, it broke my heart yesterday. And, you know, it's a tough thing for me to hear and to now have to deal with, but, you know, I'm going to do my best with it.
Are you crying? Billy, are you crying? I'm not crying. It's just dusty in here. Billy, are you crying? Are you crying?
Absolutely. It's not too late, Coach Flo. Do the right thing. Play the 37-year-old. The crazy part about that is he's going to be the best teammate going forward. After having said all that, he's still going to be the most supportive backup in the entire league.
Billy, you and me, we go outside of the stadium and we start chanting, "We want Ryan." Let's zig while everyone else is zagging.
Like, 10 to 12 feet apart, though.
Let's form a protest and march outside the stadium saying, "We want Ryan."
I think Flores knows because I don't think Fitzpatrick has ever strung together three consecutive great starts in a row. He's had two in a row, and I think he knows the third one is coming. And it was two at time. That's it. I'm telling you, game long Fitzpatrick, and I guarantee you, he has never had three great games in a row, as a starter.
Can you please stop ripping Ryan Fitzpatrick?
Sorry.
Like, why is it that I come in?
I don't like how he's acting.
But why is it? This is you. This is you in every way. I'm totally being sarcastic. You are one-upping me by then ripping him as well. Like, you're saying how bad he is, and you just went one. You just 5,000 yards for three different teams because he stinks for everybody, and you're just ripping him right and left, and I don't want you on my side. And furthermore, you've made me break character. I was joking.
I wasn't.
You stop doubling.
I was so thrilled to have you on my side.
Stop doubling up on, like, you just let me have the sarcasm before you get in here. Double it up and start ripping him.
If Ryan Fitzpatrick could go back in time to Sunday, do you think instead of standing on the sidelines and hyping up the crowd when Tua came in, he'd be like kind of calming them down, like, no, shh, 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 no excitement, shh, quiet, shh, shh, let him work, shh,
boo, secret boos,
yeah, boo, like, boo, boo, who was that, who was,
boo,
pinching his nose and wafting air in front of him, like, oh, this guy's terrible,
you should see him in practice,
overrated.
This is so confusing for Ryan Fitzpatrick. He's lost his job plenty, but this is the first time he's lost his job while playing well. So it's a whole new deal for the 37-year-old.
And he's also saying, though, that because I don't think we played the sound that Schefter quoted him on, which is him saying he's been benched a bunch, but that this one hurts more than any of them. And I don't know if it's because he wanted to see if he could get to his unprecedented third great game in a row.
Never happened.
Yeah, it's never happened, as Stu Gatz likes to point out. More blubbering from Fitzpatrick, the selfish Fitzpatrick.
There's a lot of stuff going through my mind yesterday. Is this it? Like, was that, you know, my last game as an NFL player in terms of, you know, being the starter and going out there and playing? I've been, you know, starter. I've been benched all kinds of different ways, but this was kind of the first place other than Buffalo where I just felt fully, you know, committed and invested and felt like it was my team.
His team, he felt like, and I do think that the emotion of this and the reason this one is different, Stu Gatz, is not because he's playing well, or not even because of the my team. It's because you look in the mirror and what looks back at you is your career mortality.
Like, right.
Where he realizes, oh, the rest, like, I just started for the last time unless someone gets hurt. Like, I am now, the rest of the way, I'm probably going to be a backup for everybody.
Right, but that's what he is. He's a career backup.
But he's not. He's a guy who's, as a starter, thrown for 5,000 yards with how many different teams?
Which you strangely use as an insult. I guess the different teams there is a strike against him, but that's impressive. He's had a good career.
He's had more rushing touchdowns than Bo Jackson.
I'm not saying he hasn't had a good career. I'm not saying he's not a good guy. I'm just saying, in this particular instance, you signed this year with the Dolphins knowing eventually they were going to give the ball to Tua, and now your heart is broken once they did what you knew.
All you keep doing is saying he's a bad quarterback. I mean, like, everyone
else.
Well,
he's not great, Dan. Let's be honest. I mean, great quarterbacks stay with their team. I mean,
I'm not arguing he's great. It's just I'm talking about the humanity of his eulogy, and you keep wanting at the funeral to be like, yeah, but he's dead, and he wasn't that good when he was alive.
It's $71 million. He's fine.
I think that's why the word good exists, because it's not great and it's not bad. Good is fine. We can call somebody good.
I would say he's an average starting quarterback, and that's hard to do.
I mean, show me all the average starting quarterbacks that have stuck around to 37 years old, Dan.
His best case scenario now is going to another team and having this heartbreak again. Just being a stopgap for four games and having the exact same press conference where he's almost
in 37. Team.
Well, Monty made the point, I'm going to play another clip that makes you feel even more for Ryan Fitzpatrick, and I think a lot of people are, but Monty made the observation, he's dealing with something that every NFLer, for the most part, has to deal with, but when it's 37-year-old bearded Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Yes, well, he's adorable as part of it, like, and he gets to be adorable because look at him.
I basically got fired yesterday, and then my day of work today consisted of me in Zoom meetings listening to the guy that fired me, and then, you know, locked in a spaced out room you know, with my replacement for 4 hours today.
Yeah, that's humanizing it.
That's me watching Greeny.
You think Fitzpatrick will have the defense sign when the Dolphins have the ball? Like, he'll have someone, accomplice, holding the fence?
Who else is on the team that wouldn't want Tua to have success? Yes, I have him holding up in one hand the D and the other hand the fence when Tua's on the field.
So what's the play here now? Does he, like, look around the league and try to scope out who's most likely to get injured next season? And let me stick around there, because honestly, Tua might be on that list. Like, if he sticks around long enough, he may get this team right back in 2 weeks.
That's the Tannehill plan. He would have learned it in the Dolphin offices. Like, that's exactly how to do it. Go to Mariota, wherever Mariota is starting.
Dan Le Batard.
Yes, everybody, Stu Gatz did put the willy in willy-nilly.
Stu Gatz.
Someone is claiming that I have the swine flu. Perhaps I do.
This is the Dan Le Batard Show on ESPN Radio.
ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance. Progressive is proud to honor our veterans by donating cars to move lives forward, especially in times of need. Learn more about their Keys to Progress program and plans for 2020 at keystoprogress.com. All guests on the Dan Le Batard Show appear via the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Today on ESPN Daily, UFC fighter Khabib is 28-0 inside the octagon. But can he stay undefeated? ESPN's Brett Okamoto previews Saturday's highly anticipated showdown. I hope I said that right. That's on ESPN Daily. Subscribe wherever you get your podcast.
So we want to get to our friend Stan Van Gundy now being entrusted with the most precious of things, the young treasure. It is a gift to be given a job that has one of those in basketball, but we just saw Alvin Gentry have one of those in the same city with Anthony Davis, and it all fell apart. So it isn't an easy job, but I would love to watch Stan do it. Like, he surprised us by doing that. I really didn't think that he was going to go back to coaching, but he texted me last night that it's as much addiction as it is passion, because he changes when he has to do this.
Right.
He becomes miserable, and he becomes vastly less fun. You see, when Stan is on with us as a coach, you can see that it's not nearly as fun as when he's a broadcaster.
Is he going to stop tweeting? I wonder. I mean, that's
I'm sure he is after the election.
And it's just coaching, right? He's not doing what he did with the Pistons, which is run the front office, run the entire organization, basically.
Griff. They got Griff there.
Okay. That's a good spot for Stan, is it not? That's a good young team.
A tremendous job. You have Zion Williamson, obviously. That's a headliner, but you have the most improved player in the game in Brandon Ingram. That's a job that doesn't really come available all that often. So I know he's a quality of life person, and he said the next place I coach is going to have to be a relocated franchise in Lake Mary. But for Zion and that young core, you make an exception.
I'm fascinated by that addiction, because Stan was really good at being an analyst, at calling games, at doing studio shows. And I think it's a lot easier. And he made good money doing it because he's excellent at doing it. But that thing keeps pulling him back.
It's an interesting life choice, because what it is, it's a choice to be unhappy more often. It's a choice to choose a more difficult job by leaps and bounds that makes you unhappier when you don't need the money. And it's just chasing the winning. And it's just chasing. Stan's never won one. I should have started this segment with the sarcasm of another white recycled coach. another white man being given a great job when black men are waiting in line. Another failure gets reheated for the fourth time.
He's replacing a black man.
Uh-huh. A recycled one at that, and Alvin Gentry. Look, they got Jrue Holiday, too, who's one of the more underrated players in the league.
As I've been teasing him, the thing I've been teasing him about is, so now you're going to be vacationing with LeVar Ball? Like, because you remember he came after LeVar Ball pretty hard. Like, my first order of business getting in there would be, anybody want Lonzo? Anyone? Do any of you guys want him? That paradigm shift in that league, like when you look at who are the young players who are going to come get the stuff that the older guys at the top of the conference have, like, this team has them. Like,
well, they have Holiday, they have Brandon Ingram, and they have Zion.
What got traded for Anthony Davis? I don't know what you guys feel about Ball, but what got traded for Anthony Davis, because I watched Ingram play last year in a way that was – I was startled by how much better than he was. And this is thinking that he was going to be pretty special coming out of college, but he was like a non-factor before last year. And then they just sort of gave him the lead role, and they weren't very good, but he was much improved.
Yeah, he was an all-star. Brandon Ingram's an all-star. Jrue Holiday, I believe, is an all-star or has been in his career. They got nice pieces in that trade. Look, they got an all-star back. You never win the trade when you give up the Hall of Fame talent in Anthony Davis in the prime of his career, but you could do a hell of a lot worse than Griff and the Pels did in getting back Brandon Ingram. Nice pieces like Josh Hart. J.J. Redick is there, I'm sure, furious because he finally missed the playoffs for the first time in his career.
You know Griffin's going to be aggressive,
too. Yes, yeah. Lonzo made progress last year, Mike. He did.
And then in the bubble, all that progress went away. He was so bad in that bubble.
I want to talk about a story, though, Stugatz, nearby in New Orleans. Did you see or did you read any of the headlines or the story about what's happening at LSU with the investigations of the NCAA? Have you seen any of this?
No, but I think they self-imposed, right? Like, they They gave themselves their own penalties.
You mean they gave it to Odell Beckham?
Yeah.
This is a story that I thought was funny for a number of reasons. One of which is you remember the big scandal of them celebrating the championship and Odell Beckham being in the locker room and all of a sudden dollars flying up in the air physically all over the place.
Yep.
So that punishment came down, and it comes down on the same week here where, funny enough, Stugatz, LeBron James is signing a Hummer endorsement after a high school career that involved one of these stupid Hummer controversies. So now we've got the stupid Odell Beckham controversy about him deciding to give hundreds of dollars to these athletes, and a couple of layers to this, right? One, hey, LSU got good. Big surprise, right? LSU got good with a swamp monster as its coach. Their athletes were totally overwhelming. We just saw a quarterback have a better college season than we've ever seen. What do you mean they were cheating? How are they beating all the other cheaters? Oh, they were also cheating. And this is one of the ways that they were cheating. And I don't mind the cheating, Stugatz, unless it's like this. Unless the booster's stealing from a hospital, embezzling money as the CEO of a hospital, allegedly. And the coaching staff is flying around in a private plane, and he's giving the father of one of their offensive linemen $180,000 for a no-show job while embezzling a hospital. For the father of an offensive lineman, what do you think the running backs and the receivers are going for when a no-show job for the father of an offensive lineman is $180,000?
Like, what is Joe Burrow getting? What are the Burrows
getting? What do you imagine Jefferson's getting?
A lot more.
Like, when it's $180,000 for a no-show job for your dad for an offensive lineman. But the headline is Odell Beckham gives him money. Like, that's, you got to read into the story before you get to the embezzling from the hospital, from the booster giving a no-show job.
But that headline gets many people to the story.
Yeah, I mean, but it's silly. It's not the crime. It's the criminal. It's how famous are you? Like, any of us, if I put it on the poll and ask, hey, what's worse here? An NFL player giving LSU players a few thousand dollars in the locker room while celebrating a championship, or a hospital CEO embezzling from the hospital so he can pay a kid's father, you know, I mean, but for a job he doesn't do.
If that's the headline, I'm not certain many people read
the
story.
It's a long headline.
Yes.
I think Charles Robinson was in consideration for a Pulitzer Prize because Nevin Shapiro bought a hibachi dinner for a bunch of players. This is ridiculous, and we just don't bat an eye anymore. We probably overreacted to that. I'm a persecuted Canes fan over here.
Yeah, a little bit.
Time for Dan to reluctantly take part in something his two guys couldn't be happier doing.
Speaking of which, we have Dick Vitale on for the first time in a long time. Man. How are we handling all of this? Because he's a Rays fan, but our show's history with him is tense, and he's a lovable mascot for the company. And Stugatz has a bit of a beef with him because he doesn't
That beef. We squashed that beef years ago. He's been on with us several times after the hang-up incident of, 2008?
Have we squashed it? I don't feel like we squashed it. I'd like to squash it.
He's been on since.
Right. Stugatz was worried about how this was going to go because he wants to yell at him about Rick Pitino coaching at Iona.
I was right.
Stugatz is in control of how this goes. He shouldn't be worried. If you don't want it to go poorly, don't agitate him.
I love Dick Vitale, okay? I really do. I respect him, and I want my relationship to be a good one with him, and right now I don't feel like it is. That's all I'm saying. I'd like to repair it.
All right, we'll see if if you do in about
we'll
a half hour.
We'll see if I believe you at all.
Yes.
Don Lebatard.
Texter writes in, oh, wow, Dan, you don't argue and you don't yell. You're so perfect, except you have the face of a 600-pound man.
Stugatz.
I couldn't talk.
This is the Don Lebatard Show with the Stugatz on ESPN Radio.
The Dan Lebatard Show is brought to you by Shell V-Power Nitro Plus Premium Gasoline. Guests on the Dan Lebatard Show appear via the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. ESPN Investigates Season 2, The Running Man Podcast, is now available. Subscribe and listen wherever you get your podcast.
I want to send a congratulations and a very loving and heartfelt shout-out to some pioneers in our industry in a second. But before I do that, we bring on an even bigger titan than those bums, Tony Kornheiser and Michael Wilbon. Here's Christine Lisi.
Uh-huh. And finally, Ernest Hemingway survived malaria, pneumonia, anthrax, skin cancer, dysentery, anemia, hepatitis, diabetes, 2 plane crashes, a ruptured kidney, a ruptured liver, a ruptured spleen, a fractured skull, and a crushed vertebra. But if he were around to listen to today's show, it would probably be too much for him to overcome.
I mean, really, Jesus.
She was showing off, too, as an update person. Yes.
I was doing it fast because I didn't want to mess up.
It was so good. It was so good. Stugatz would have stumbled 40 times through that obstacle course. Thank you, Christine. There, you get the highest production our show offers. The kazoos is blown by Lorenzo. Lorenzo is the one who was pointing out to me. I did not know this before today, but these guys are responsible in some ways for everything that has been my television career at ESPN, because after sports reporters, Tony and Mike and Eric Rideholm, the executive producer of that show, those guys created across ESPN the argument culture you see today. I wonder, and they did it better than any of us. They did it with more chemistry than any of us, and they do it still in a way that is classier than most of what you've seen they've spawned.
I was going to say, still doing it better than everyone.
Well, they're certainly the ones getting the ratings still after all these years. And I was wondering if Chris and Billy and Tony even remember what was on before PTI in that time slot, because this is the 20-year anniversary of PTI. Today is the 20-year anniversary. Tony thought it was going to last like 6 months. They were so bad at the beginning, so bad. And they were actually replacing a popular show. It was just Roy Firestone doing Up Close and doing these interviews daily. It was a great show, but it's really hard to get a daily guest to come into a studio and do a show. So many of the guests were slow or not worth 25 minutes. And so they changed that from literal bells and whistles. They changed the format where it's like, we're going to talk about things fast. We're going to talk about them a minute at a time. If you're not interested in this, you're going to be interested a minute from now.
I remember the first time watching it, and it was jarring because they tackled topics and important topics, and they did so quickly. And I remember not liking it and rejecting it because I wanted them to spend more time on it. But then I got used to it as I continued to watch it. And that's become the norm.
Well, they were ahead of their time, okay? All you've seen, their influence on television, anyone who's doing that thing on the side of the screen telling you what's coming up, they stole it from PTI. That started with PTI. The going through topics quickly was not something that was done before. Like, that is something that they were doing there as newspaper columnists. Just basically what they were doing is speeding up sports reporters. And they were doing it ahead of their time. Like, hey, you don't have time for this. You're going to have attention deficit disorder. Now, keep in mind, this is largely, you know, not before the internet, but it's before social media became what it's become. And so they were giving you, basically, they cannibalized SportsCenter. Okay, the big product for ESPN. They took SportsCenter's ratings because they weren't just giving you the news. They were showing you how to think about the news. It wasn't just sports and highlights. It's their take on the news of the day. And what ended up happening is people used that show as, this is what I will download. And they still use it this way. This is where I'm going to get my 22-minute cube of sports.
Right.
And so I could talk about this at work.
Right, to catch up. Right, this is right. I get it all in 22 minutes. I don't need to sit down and watch a 60-minute highlight show, a 90-minute highlight show. I have two guys who are very good, very credible, and they're talking about it, and I get everything. I catch up in 20 minutes. But it's amazing. I love the show. I still love the show.
No, but keep in mind that this was a pioneering thing that still is doing it better than all of the cheap imitators, and we are all cheap imitators. And you could look at them and say, they're in their 70s, and what they now do is cranky and old. What they now do is, I can see it anywhere on television. But the only reason you can see it anywhere on television is because they birthed it.
Is it fair to say, though, that Tony's always felt cranky and old? Like,
yes.
Okay.
Well, Tony's been, Tony... Put it on the poll, Guillermo. Has Tony been 73 years old since he was 26 years old?
But it's old enough that millennials weren't really a term back then. Now it's basically, here are the sports topics du jour, and also let's yell at millennials.
Well, yes, what has happened there, and Mike is like old people that who get formed. Mike is done with learning. He is not here for advanced metrics and all of you millennials with your new information.
He lasted a lot longer than I did.
Yes. And Kornheiser is still doing prep every single day and is willing to do some of the things that the best among us do, like Kirkshin, who all of a sudden learns, you know, very quickly, oh, wait, I've got to get downloaded on the new way people are measuring people in my sports because the way that I was doing it was all wrong. Wilbon is going to stick with all wrong. Wilbon, I don't care whether you guys want me to learn or not. He's going to yell about the NFL's arrogance. He's going to be a homer for all things NBA and Michael Jordan.
Not pay attention to ERA and yell at Frank Isola.
Yes. Oh, here. In honor of the 20-year anniversary of giving birth to all of this debate conversation that passes for content everywhere on ESPN. We've got Frank Isola and Mike Wilbon having what we believe to be one of the more legendary sports arguments you will find anywhere. And this is a recalcitrant, cranky, stubborn Mike Wilbon telling you that I don't need advanced metrics. I don't even need the metrics, things like run support that aren't even advanced metrics. I'll tell you how I measure a winner. He wins.
DeGrom could become the first pitcher in 100 years to finish with an ERA of below 2 runs and without a winning record. His manager, Mickey Callaway, said that right now the Cy Young Award is DeGrom's to lose. Mike, I know you're big on wins. Do you agree?
Hell no, because I'm big on wins. Win the game, Frank. Win the game. I don't care what the ERA is. When you add them up at the end, you know, the Cubs probably had some Cy Young Award winning ERA champions in that 100-plus year period. And if somebody said, I'll trade that for the wins that get me a World Series, what would you do? If the answer is anything other than I'll take the wins, then it's fraudulent. Then I resign from following sports. Win the damn game.
Mike, he doesn't get any run support. It's at 3.6 runs per game.
Okay, you got to hang tough then.
Only seven starters in baseball.
Don't allow it.
Less than he did. His ERA is 1.8.
I don't care about his ERA.
The Iceman. He sped past that one and then realized.
Time to bleed.
I wish on their 20-year anniversary that they just changed the name to Hang Tough today. Congratulations, Wilbon and Kornheiser. May you age as cranky as ever.
Don Lebatard, sexy basketball analysis.
Stugatz.
That is Barkley. I mean, we made Chuck. Round mound of no rings.
This is the Don Lebatard Show with the Stugatz on ESPN Radio.
ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance. News from the Dan Lebatard Show Nation. Someone has just hit us up on the Dr. Pepper Twitter feed. At Ciro B brings up something that was said during Game 2 of the World Series last night. John Smoltz going full at Stugatz790 in the viewing audience, explaining that the Rays really need to get a split on the road before heading home in the bubble.
Was he joking?
They did.
Was he joking or was he doing it on purpose?
Oh, no, I think he was serious. Yeah. I mean, and then he realized bubble, no fans, and there is no going home.
Mike Ryan is looking at you just totally confused.
He's just formulating an opinion based off. I'm sure that was breaking the news to him there. I think John Smoltz is a pretty bright guy. I think he knows that he's stuck in one central neutral venue.
But you don't think you get caught up in saying the same things that you traditionally have said for many, many years calling those games? I mean...
Okay, Stugatz.
Why don't you look it up? Because I think Mike's right that the first time that Stugatz was reading that is when he was
serious. Yeah, oh, no, it was serious. So you didn't watch that.
I didn't, but it's just a guess. I mean, someone had to answer the question.
Look, 2020.
You're not sure either. I mean,
and watch.
2020 is upside down in many different ways, but I did not have Borat doing the greatest journalism of 2020. That is not something that I had. I've told you before about my obsession with the genius of Sacha Baron Cohen doing it across decades. because I can't believe he's still out here fooling people. Is that tonight, Mike? Is that does the Sacha Baron Cohen movie come out tonight on Prime?
Might be tomorrow. Let me look it up.
One thing, though, I wanted to get into here because the guys were making fun of me during the break, and mostly they were making fun of Lorenzo during the break. It's tomorrow, Mike Ryan says, the Borat documentary debuts. But you guys took a certain glee in delivering to me the news that Lorenzo had gotten the date wrong on when it is that PTI is celebrating its 20th anniversary. So during the break, Stu Gatz was taking back all the nice things he said about Wilbon because he said he was referring he wanted to save those for the 20th anniversary, not right. What we just did, which is just congratulate them for 19 years on the air.
The big 1-9.
Well, apparently they're starting their 20th year together. He told me, he's like, well, we need to clarify. They're starting their 20th year. I go, so that means this is the 19th anniversary. He's like, correct. I'm like, well, why would you position it as the 20th anniversary? Then that makes absolutely no sense. He's like, well, you know.
No, it's because Lorenzo always likes to add, we need to clarify, because he's the world's most inefficient human being. And so, of course, what would be very simple, is this or is this not the 20-year anniversary for PTI, then becomes not only that he's wrong, but then the need for clarification. And it's why you guys delighted in telling me that Lorenzo had gotten the date wrong. Not because we had gotten the date wrong, which is normally the place where you guys like to make fun of me the most, easy target, but because Lorenzo was in a position to get shot at. And I want to understand the nature of all of your relationships with Lorenzo. I want you to explain to me why that news came to me and was delivered with such glee. Is it because no matter how bad you are at your jobs, you will never be as bad as he is?
That's not fair.
I'm just wondering if Lorenzo, if they get joy out of Lorenzo messing stuff up, because Lorenzo does nothing but mess stuff up.
I know, and talk. It's so tricky with Lorenzo. It really is, because he's such a nice guy, such a sweet man. He cares so much. He will literally drop everything to do something if you need it. He might not do it correctly, but he'll drop everything to do something if you need him in a pinch. And so I'm afraid, like, I don't think anyone here really wants to rip him. I mean, I don't know. Billy seems hesitant to do it, even though
I like him. He's a nice guy. I told him, look, just stop texting Dan. It's going to be for the best. I'm telling you right now. If you don't text him, you can't have these mistakes. You can't send him the wrong anniversary. Just leave that alone.
Oh, but Mike's been telling him to stop texting me for the better part of a decade.
Yeah, that hasn't stuck yet. I don't know what's going on.
No, and it's not only that I get text from him. It's long text because he can't do anything short other than exist.
The crazy part is that nobody in my life talks to me more about Wilbon and Kornheiser than Lorenzo.
He loves
them. For him, like, he loves them. He's obsessed with them. For him to get that fact wrong just is crushing him right now. I know that.
He absolutely loves them, and I don't know if I should be saying this and who I may get in trouble for saying this. He loves them so much that during the pandemic, I know that he went to the studio to get Tony Kornheiser his chair, to take it to his house so he could use his specific chair. That's how much he loves them.
I called Tony Kornheiser to wish him a happy 20th anniversary. He answered his phone from the golf course and said, 20th anniversary of what? And I'm like, PTI. So now he's wandering around telling everyone it's the 20-year anniversary of PTI because I've given him bad information that was given to me by Lorenzo. And Mike Ryan is staring straight ahead, totally not surprised by any of this. You don't want in on this conversation?
No, I'll take a pass. Dickie V, though, is joining us next, and we have a history with him.
Okay. Wow, you've reached that stage of the Lorenzo frustration. Dickie V next.